twisty diamond and ruby drops for the ears, another ruby in a star-shaped setting dangling from three thin chains twinkling with tiny diamonds, her dressy wrist unit, and a trio of thin bangles, one ruby, two diamonds. She had some small relief she'd at least seen all the pieces before, so he hadn't gone out and bought her more. She put on the earrings, the necklace, was fighting with the last bangle, when Rourke came in. Trina was right, she thought. He did look strip-me-naked good in his dark suit and his perfectly knotted tie of gold and red. He wore the little petunia on his lapel. When did you get dressed? I used alternate quarters. You look wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. The word's ultra-mazing. It certainly fits. He circled his finger in the air, smiled when she huffed at him. Indulge me, would you? She did the turn. Once more? He asked as he approached her. Then he caught her shoulders from the back. Well, no. That's adorable. What? What? She struggled to see her own back, caught sight of something painted just above the low, nearly ass-brushing back of the dress. Shit! Shit! What the hell is that? What did she paint on me? Get it off! I believe it's a sprig of mistletoe, and I wouldn't remove it for the world. Why would she do that? Aggrieved, Eve kept twisting to try to get a full look. I was actually nice to her, sort of. That may be why. Mistletoe, Eve. And what is the tradition for under mistletoe? How the hell do I know? That kissing thing? That's the kissing deal, right? So it is. And it appears to me she's just given you a celebrational way of saying, kiss my ass. It's you, darling. Absolutely you. She's not supposed to... Wait. She twisted herself around again, narrowed her eyes in the mirror. Kiss my ass? Huh. Maybe I won't kick hers for doing it. She untwisted, looked at him. You dressed me to match the decorations. Precisely the opposite. The decorations were chosen to spotlight your dress. You. He flicked a finger down the dent in her chin. We should go up to the ballroom. Be ready to greet guests, or we'll both suffer Somerset's wrath. Okay. Ordering her feet to suck it up, she put on the shoes. If men had to wear heels, they'd be outlawed across the land. But she took his hand, walked with him. It did look pretty great, Eve admitted, and looked even better, really, when people began to arrive. When they began to mingle around or gather in clutches. Servers wove through with offerings from the spectacular display of food or sparkling drinks from one of the bars. Speaking of colorful, she spotted Peabody and McNabb come in. He wore Christmas red tails with a silver shirt, a reindeer tie, and short silver boots. To complement, Eve supposed, Peabody's frothy dress of holly green picked through with glittery silver. Since her partner's hair was a mass of tiny curls with silver banding woven through, Eve felt less self-conscious about the hint of curls in her own. Peabody. Rourke kissed her hand, then her cheek, then her lips. You're gorgeous. Oh, boy. I really worked on it. You're a vision. Ian, you're a lucky man. You got it. Here you go, she-body. He plucked two glasses of champagne from a tray. This is the iciest party of the year. We're really gonna cut the rug, kick the heels, shake the booty. Look at the food. It's so pretty. We have to dance our asses off so I can eat the food. Is that a sugar plum tree? It's a sugar plum tree. Oh, my God. Before you pick sugar plums, Eve interrupted, I need you a minute. Wanting to get this part over with, Eve started out, got waylaid twice by people who wanted to be sociable, and finally managed to get into the salon, shut the door behind Peabody. It's going to be hours of that, Eve realized. Hours of people wanting to talk to me. Here, you need this more than I do. Peabody started to hand Eve the glass. Wait, there's more. Instead, she walked over to the ice bucket, poured champagne into a glass on the tray nearby. Great, good, thanks. Listen, I'm going to keep digging on Felicity Prinz tomorrow. I think she's clear like you do, but I can dig deeper, see if there's anything there. This isn't about that. She picked up a box from the table where Somerset had arranged her wrapped gifts. It's for you. Rourke has something for McNabb.
Oh! We put yours under the tree downstairs. I can go get it.
No, we'll get to it. Thanks in advance. I'm giving these out tonight when I can, that's all.
So I can open it now? I love when I can open it now. Ooh, the paper's so pretty.
She picked at it delicately, carefully breaking seals. Jesus, Peabody, rip the damn thing open. I don't have all night.
I can use it again. I haven't wrapped everything yet.
She slid the box free, carefully folded the paper, preserved the ribbon and bow, and finally opened the box.
Oh!
She pulled out the gift, stared at it, eyes and mouth wide.
It's a magic coat! It's my own magic coat! It's pink! It's a pink magic coat! Holy shit! Holy pink magic shit, Dallas!
The pink was Rourke's doing. You can't hang that on me. I said brown.
I have to sit down. No, I have to try it on. Then I have to sit down. Holy shit, you got me a pink magic coat.
Don't blubber. Why is there so much blubbering today?
Thank God I used all waterproof, sweatproof, smudgeproof face enhancers because I'm going to blubber. Dallas, wow. Just wow. It's leather. It's pink leather.
The pink's not on me, ever.
Holy, holy, holy shit! I can't stop saying it.
She swung the coat on over the frothy dress. It looked silly with it, Eve thought, the military style of it over the party dress, but apparently Peabody didn't think so. She twirled in it so the knee-length pink leather billowed and swirled.
Oh, my God, it's beyond! Just beyond! It feels like leather. It is leather! It has pockets and pretty buttons, and it's magic, and it's pink.
I can't go around wearing coats with internal body armor when my partner's not. Peabody stopped twirling. She didn't blubber, but a couple tears trickled down.
It means so much to me that you'd have it made for me, for my safety. That, all by itself, means everything. But the rest? It didn't have to be leather. It didn't have to be pink. But you did that because you knew it would make me happy.
You get stunned or stuck or blasted, it's pretty damned inconvenient for me. On Peabody's watery laugh, Eve sighed. You're family. That's it. Peabody grabbed her, squeezed.
Okay, okay.
Eve tapped her on the back. Okay, okay.
I love you. People don't say that to people enough, so I'm saying it. I really love you, and I'm going to let go in a second because I know it weirds you, but thanks. Thank you so much.
Okay.
I have to go thank Rourke.
Peabody pulled back.
And show McNabb. Then I need to put it away safe. Is there some place I can put it?
Give it to Somerset. He'll stow it.
Right. Oh, wow. Just wow.
I'm thanking you again right now by not hugging you again and kissing you on the lips. And I'm saying you're welcome by not putting a boot up your ass. Still wearing the coat, Peabody bolted out. Eve took another minute. She really hadn't signed off on the pink, but that was okay. In the big picture way, the color had been the icing on the Peabody cake, so it was okay. Eve opened the door just as Charles Monroe and Louise walked up. Hey! Charles did kiss her on the lips. Merry Christmas, Lieutenant Sugar. Merry Christmas. Hey, if I give you a present, she said to Louise, can I have a couple minutes to talk to Charles? What kind of present? Smiling, looking elegant and sleek in a shimmer of winter white, Dr. Louise D'Amato winked at her husband. He's a pretty special present himself. Eve stepped back, gestured them in. She found the gift bag for Louise. This kind. I was kidding, but I'll take it. Louise pulled out froth after froth of sparkly tissue paper, unearthed the handbag. It borrowed its shape from the old-fashioned doctor's bag, changed it up with the color of smoky lavender, the silver buckles. The inestimable Tico had polished it off with one of his scarves, deep purple, metallic silver, tied artistically on the handles. Oh, I love it! Dallas, it's fabulous! It's gorgeous! And the scarf is just lovely! Thank you! Eve got another hug, a buss on the cheek. Good. Welcome. Now, give me a couple minutes with Charles. If you see Somerset, he'll stow that for you. I can build an outfit around this bag and scarf. When she left them alone, Charles gestured to the ice bucket. Mind? No, go ahead. It's a party. I just wanted a couple minutes to pick your brain, exploit your two careers if it's okay. It's always okay. So, you're picking for sex? You could say. When you were in LC, and I guess now, too, in your sex therapist job, do you run into many people who trade sex for money, unlicensed, who just make a sideline out of it? Sure. Not always money, but compensation. Clothes, jewelry, a favor, a trip. Some live their lives trading sex for money or things. You'd know that. Yeah, but this was different, she thought. I mean, someone who pursues it as a serious sideline, even keeps books. Well, that would be less common. He sat, a vid-star handsome man who might have been born with a flute of champagne in his hand. I haven't worked with anyone in therapy who has that issue, but I knew a few in my LC days. And what sort of clientele are we talking? What drives the bargain on both sides? For the provider? Sex is a commodity or a power, or so confused with their self-worth they can't separate the two. For the receiver, it's most usually romantic confusion. They can tell themselves it's not business, which in this case it is, just not legal business or structured business. Or, often, if there's an age or monetary gap, the receiver feels they're simply taking care of the giver, simply providing them with little gifts or advantages. This gives them the power, or at least the illusion of it, in the relationship. Why not just go to an LC? Keep it inside the lines? For some, it might be more exciting or more intimate. Or it could be the relationship devolved into pay for play. Who was killed? He asked. The provider or the receiver? Provider. I also suspect him of blackmail, and I know in several cases it wasn't a receiver in the sense they agreed. He dosed them. His eyes changed, hardened. That changes quite a bit. Do you know if he'd attempted to get a license? Not as far as I can tell. He kept a spreadsheet, kept his money off the books, but kept a personal record. Women only for the sex. And some were fine with paying him. Others, generally younger than the willing ones, some of them married, he lured in, dosed, raped, then blackmailed.
He'd never have gotten through the training or the psych tests to get a license, not in New York.
Not even street level if he'd been screened. What you're describing, to me, is someone who felt no real connection to the receiver. It's a business transaction, of course, but an intimate one that requires, at least on the higher levels, some finesse, some care, and considerable training to handle various needs and situations. Above all, there has to be trust in the provider. A man like this would never have been able to gain real trust. You've spoken with Mira.
Yeah.
And this is all running along her lines and my own. But you've been in the life, and now you treat people for sex stuff. Nodding, Charles sipped the frothy wine. Do you suspect one of the women he used?
Maybe.
Maybe. It feels like, if that's the case, okay, you bash him in the head a couple times on impulse. That's how he bought it. But then, if you're going to add a flourish, and the killer added one, wouldn't you cut off his balls or jab the knife in his groin, something that relates?
First, let me say, ouch.
They stabbed him after.
So you're thinking it might have been a jealous partner of one of the women, or one of the people, male or female, he blackmailed?
Maybe. Likely. I'm gathering information.
What sort of flourish, if you can tell me?
Stabbed. His own kitchen knife.
I mean, where was he stabbed?
In the chest.
The heart?
Not exactly. It was more...
Oh.
The heart? Symbolically, you're thinking.
Some receivers fall in love.
It's a good LC's job to walk the line between trust and affection, even a touch of infatuation and love. A client who falls in love is dangerous to the LC, to themselves.
A knife through the heart?
He drank again, shook his head. I'm no cop, so I can't say. And imagine you see plenty who've been stabbed in that area without any love gained or lost, but, yeah, but...
Something else to think about.
I appreciate it.
Absolutely any time.
He rose, took her hand to walk out with her. You and Louise still look pretty shiny.
I feel pretty shiny.
Marriage is an adventure and a comfort.
For some, Eve thought, for others.
She thought of Quigley and Copley.
For others, maybe a competition.
The music rolled now, and the ballroom throbbed with it and with people. So many, Eve realized, had arrived in the time she'd been in the salon.
She spotted Feeney, wearing not a monkey suit, but a black one she knew he kept for memorials and funerals,
by one of the bars, chewing the fat with Jenkinson, and Nadine, wearing ice-pick silver, dancing with the damn near 7-foot crack. The ace reporter and the sex club owner looked to be having a hell of a good time. She'd have to get Nadine in the salon, give out that gift. And there was Mira, and the truly adorable Mr. Mira, sitting at one of the tables, laughing with Commander and Mrs. Whitney. She probably had to go over there, say something, but she rarely saw her commander yucking it up, so she'd just wait on that.
And there you are.
She turned to Rourke.
Yeah, right here.
I guess you know Peabody liked the coat.
There's little more satisfying about giving than in seeing the receiver so genuinely happy.
Ha! That slides along with my quick talk with Charles about sex.
Case-related sex.
Naturally. Plus, I wanted to give Louise her thing.
I need to get Mira, Nadine, and the others to give those things. Then I'll be done. And if you take a few moments to brainstorm, case-related, I'm fine with it, as long as you dance with me. But the music had changed, turned slow, romantic, a little dreamy. Still, she always felt so damn awkward dancing in public. He gathered her in, circled with her, laughed into her eyes. You have such interesting areas of modesty. Couples routinely hold each other when they dance slow. Yeah, maybe. But I bet not that many of them have their commanding officer watching. A dance. I'm not taking off your clothes, Eve. I bet you are in your mind.
Well, I am now. So thanks for the idea.
When she laughed at that, he caught her for a quick light kiss. She responded by linking her arms around his neck. What the hell? It's a Christmas party! Chapter 16. Eve always felt strange and a little awkward socializing with Commander Whitney. Her strongest image of him would always be of him behind his big desk, New York City rising up in the window behind him. His dark, careworn face sober, his broad shoulders holding the weight of command. So seeing him dancing, including the booty shake already mentioned by McNabb, with his elegant and somewhat scary wife, just threw her world out of kilter. She didn't have the knack for mingling. Not like Rourke, who apparently knew everyone on or off planet, or had the talent to act as though he did. Still, she handled the small talk thing, even with people she didn't know. Bigwigs from what she thought of as the Rourke universe, their spouses or dates, research and development types, business colleagues. Mostly they wanted to talk to each other, or dance or hit the bar and buffets, so she could do the duty and move on. But it struck her odder yet to see her people mix with his. To see Baxter leaning on one of the tables chatting up one of Rourke's R&D execs. Then again, the exec was female, single, and sexy, so it wasn't a shock. And there was Cairo, Rourke's efficient admin, dancing with the adorable Dennis Mira. Over there, Santiago engaged in an obviously animated discussion with a couple of Rourke engineers over tall glasses of brew. Here, Nadine walked up, handed Eve a flute. Even in that amazing dress, you look too much like a cop just standing over here. The worlds have collided. I observe, Eve said, and sipped. And there doesn't seem to be any damage or destruction. Nadine scanned as Eve did. You've thrown parties, including both worlds, before. Yeah, but they seem to get more heavily populated, and the natives from each have more crossover. And still the planet spins, Nadine finished. I love your parties. First, because I know there are going to be so many people here I know and like, and people I may not know who are interesting. And second, in a case like tonight, I get a fabulous gift. I really do love that bag. Why do you haul around so much stuff? That's the question. How do I know what I might need at any given time during the day? It's better to be prepared for anything. Oh, Morris is going to play with the band. I love when he plays the sax. He's better, she said quietly, but still carrying a lot of sad.
I've never lost anyone I've really loved.
I don't know how anyone handles it. Silver shirt, red tie, silver band through the braid. Nadine angled her head. What? Color. He's been wearing more color again for a while. He's getting through it. You know, I'm observant and fairly intuitive, too, reporter, writer, but I'd never have put that together. You're right. He's letting some color back into his life, and that's good to see.
So, what's the story on him and De Winter? Are they a thing?
No.
Well, you certainly sound sure, and if I'm not mistaken, determined. Don't you like? Speaking of which, I believe she's heading over here. And speaking of amazing dresses...
De Winter wore hot, slick red in a long, sleek column that hugged every curve. A side slit ran nearly to her hip, revealing a long, long, toned leg and jeweled heels that sparkled like the Christmas lights with each stride.
Dallas, I haven't had a chance to thank you for the hospitality. It's a fabulous party. Your home is beyond spectacular.
Thanks. Nadine First, Dr. Garnett De Winter. We've met. The sanctuary case.
Still, De Winter extended a hand. I very much enjoyed the last broadcast of Now, but I've become a serious fan of your work altogether.
Thanks. I'm a serious fan of your dress. Valencia?
Yes. What an eye you have. It turned out to be a fun choice when I saw Morris had chosen a red tie.
She sipped her own champagne, tossed back her hair, an explosion of caramel and gold curls. I love to hear him play.
So, you and Morris are dating?
Nadine's cheery smile didn't dim under Eve's baleful stare.
Keeping each other company. Neither of us want, or are ready, I'd say, for dating. I have my daughter to consider, and he has Amaryllis. I think it's easier for him to talk about her with me, as I didn't know her, or know them together. But he certainly made my transition to New York smoother.
Oh? Nadine broadened her smile.
How so?
It can be challenging to be the new person. Especially the new person in charge. Morris gives me a sounding board and a good sense of the people I work with. One of the reasons I left D.C. was I felt I'd become complacent and needed a change. It was a well-run machine, I insist on that. But the structure and the individual personalities didn't allow for much camaraderie or... joy. I've found both here.
She gestured to the ballroom. The work we do, all three of us, it's difficult and so often dark. Without this, without the personal connections, the joy, the interest in each other, it can become more difficult and darker. I want to be able to put on an amazing red dress now and again, listen to a man I find smart and interesting play the saxophone. I want to eat and drink and talk about nothing particularly important, or about the vitally important, with people I like, respect, and admire. Doing so makes me better at my work. It makes me a better mother.
She sipped her champagne as she studied Eve. You don't like me yet, but you will. I'll grow on you.
What, like mold?
De Winter threw back her head and laughed, full and throaty.
Possibly. And I suspect you might do the same on me, because I don't like you yet either.
We'll see. What I do know absolutely is you're his friend. You're Lee's good, strong friend. I can promise you I'm his friend. So that's a beginning.
I used to flirt with him now and then. Nadine murmured. I stopped after Coltrane was killed.
You should start again. Normal keeps him steady. Dallas gives him that.
Did you come stag? De Winter asked Nadine.
Yeah. I thought about bringing a date, but I really wasn't in the mood. Dating over the holidays gets so damn sticky, too important, too symbolic.
I know. I swear it's the only time of the year I half wish I was married, so people would stop asking if I have a date for Christmas, for New Year's Eve, for this party, for that event.
God, yes. And if you have a date New Year's Eve, some people are in your face with, so is it serious? Exactly. Last year I was seeing someone, very casually, then because I, against my better judgment, asked him to a holiday event, people were all over me. Tell me about it.
They'd angled toward each other, Eve noted, drawn by the theme like magnets.
I had to stop seeing someone because he started pressuring me about Christmas plans back in October, Nadine said. It makes you crazy.
Domestic violence, suicide, and homicide percentages rise exponentially between Thanksgiving and New Year's, Eve commented, and got baffled looks from both De Winter and Nadine.
Carry on, she decided, and slipped away.
She considered ducking into the salon, 10 minutes quiet and solitude, but caught voices, laughter, so veered the other way. She could sneak downstairs to her office, she thought, grab those 10. But if she got caught in there, Somerset, there'd be hell to pay. Plenty of other rooms up here, she thought, and headed away from the music, the voices, the lights, turned into what she recalled was a smallish sitting room.
Feeney was sprawled in one of the big, overstuffed chairs, his feet up, his tie loose. He looked half asleep, with the muted wall screen showing basketball.
He shot her a sheepish look. Just wanted to check on the game. Take a break.
Great, you're now my excuse.
She dropped into another chair, heaved out a breath.
Jesus, Feeney, why do people like parties?
Like this one? Prime booze and eats? Great space? And mostly girls, some of the guys, too, get a charge out of sprucing up fancy. Sheila's having the time of her life. When I ducked out, she was talking to Anna Whitney and some Rourke exec about knitting. The three of them were into it like it was their religion. I needed 10. I just ducked out on Nadine and De Winter talking about dating, about holiday dating. Maybe you win this one, but knitting's pretty close.
Music's solid, though. Rourke knows how to rock the house.
How's the case going?
I've got some strong lines. I'm looking...
She trailed off when she sensed movement, glanced over to see Santiago hesitate in the doorway.
Private party? He asked.
No, just taking a break from the crowd.
Then I'm in.
He brought in a brew with him, grabbed a chair.
It's a hell of a party, LT. Hell of a party. I was talking to this guy, Derek, works for Rourke. He played minor league ball for a couple years, screwed up his arm, switched to programming and design. Anyway, he's got a local league plays ball. I'm gonna check it out, see if I can get in on that.
What do you play? Feeney asked him.
High school and college?
Shortstop.
Got a partial ride in college on the sports scholarship.
There's nothing like baseball.
You didn't stick with it? Eve asked.
I wanted the badge.
Love to play, but it's play for me, not the job. I wanted the job.
They talked baseball, talked shop. Eve told herself to get up, go back, do her duty. Then Reinecke strolled in.
Hey, anybody else got the weird seeing Whitney tear up the dance floor?
Yes, Eve and Santiago said together, and Feeney shook his head.
You think because somebody's got a few years on you, they don't have the moves? Me and Jack could dance and drink the lot of you into the ground.
I don't see you out there, Reinecke pointed out, flopped into a chair.
You will.
Carmichael came in, looking loose in a little black dress, bare feet, and sparkly red toenails.
Is this the bullpen?
She sat on the arm of Santiago's chair, copped his beer for a sip.
Phew! Some party, boss. Some serious party. I just saw Dickhead doing the sexy dance with Dr. De Winter. I had to remove myself, save my eyes.
She's pretty sexy. If I went for girls, I'd be pretty wound up,
But Dickhead's just scary. Christ, I better get back out there. You could be next in the sexy dance line. Eve started out, paused long enough to tap the tat at the base of her spine. What is that? Reinecke demanded. It stands for kiss my ass, she told him, and left the cop laughter behind her. Mulling tactics, she took the long way, ducked outside, then started around toward the ballroom terrace. Anybody asked, she'd been doing her mingling out there. The detour caused her to walk in on Trueheart in a lip lock with his girlfriend, which caused all three parties a moment of deep embarrassment. Eve kept moving while the couple flushed scarlet behind her. She ran into Baxter next, just inside the ballroom. Hey, Dallas, wanna dance? Absolutely not. Don't you have a date or something? A man can't bring a date to this kind of shindig. It's too symbolic of serious business this close to Christmas, and it prevents him from trolling the single females. So that's actually true, on both sides of the line. Huh. Since it's a party, and also true, I'm gonna tell you, you look incendiary. Love the ass tat. What are you doing looking at my ass, detective? Because it's there, he said, unrepentant. All wrapped in pretty gold, and we're off duty, and it's a safe ass to look at as it's married. Oddly, I find those all reasonable answers. But stop it and look at someone else's ass. Yes, sir. Want some of this? He took a flute off a passing tray. Why the hell not? As she sipped, she spotted Rourke, smiling as he leaned down to kiss Mavis. It's nice, Baxter said with an easy, contented sigh, when the family gets together. She glanced up at him. A damn good cop, she thought, and not nearly as superficial as he liked to pretend. One dance, she decided, and keep your hands off my ass. She did see Feeney dance as promised. It amused her to see him hold his own with the ridiculously energetic Peabody and McNabb. When he shed his suit coat for a second round, Eve picked it up, checked the size. I want to get him a magic coat, she said to Rourke. I should have thought of it before. Maybe he's not in the field much like he used to be, but he should have one. Shit brown, because he wears a lot of shit brown, so he must like it. Can we get him a magic coat? Of course we can. 42 regular in shit brown. Good. She slipped an arm around his waist, let her head rest lightly against his shoulder. My feet are fucking killing me. A number of the ladies have shed their shoes. You could do the same if you didn't have this naked feet and public phobia. Feet are personal. I don't know why nobody gets that. Amused, in love, he brushed his lips over her temple. The crowd's thinning a bit.
We can find a table. Sit for a while, till it thins more.
It's okay. They're past the if-I-can-just-sit-down stage. It's like family, like Baxter said to me before. Some of them are your family, some mine, some ours, but luckily for tonight, they're all getting along fine. Plus, they're intermixing, so we'll see how that goes. Santiago might end up playing ball with one of your guys. Baxter's gonna end up sleeping with that blonde over there from your R&D. Cairo and Mira had their heads together like sisters or whatever. Lots of that kind of thing going on tonight. How do you feel about that intermixing? I'm okay with it. Wasn't sure, but I'm okay with it. Still, after tonight, I don't want to talk to anybody but cops, suspects, wits, and you. Not in that order, but that's pretty much it for me, for as long as possible. Understood. We could whittle that down considerably.
Do I have to negotiate with you to convince you to take a post-New Year's break? You, me, an island? I'm there. As long as...
Also understood. Case is cleared. No pursuit of some mad killer in progress.
Being married to a cop sucks. You're entirely wrong. Because she knew he meant it, she smiled. Do you think McNabb could be a genuine freak of nature? Nobody should be able to move or twist that way if they had actual bones and a spine. Maybe I should ask De Winter. Who's not involved romantically with Morris, which is good, but is his friend, which is also good. Plus, I learned tonight, you're not supposed to date over the holidays unless you're deadly serious because of the symbolism and madness, and Santiago played shortstop. And Trueheart and his girlfriend must be serious because they had their tongues down each other's throats during the holidays, and you have some guy, some exec, who considers knitting his religion. My, my, Lieutenant, you've mingled. Damn straight. It took considerable champagne consumption, but I held up my end. He gave her ass a light pat. Beautifully. She held up her end, if she said so herself, through the leave-taking where entirely too many people insisted on hugging her. Because they were slightly more than half-lit and it was simple, Somerset poured Peabody and McNabb into one of the guest rooms he'd prepped, and that was fine with her. As she expected, Baxter and the blonde left together and with twin gleams in their eyes. When the last straggler was out the door, Eve hobbled to the bedroom, pried her abused feet out of the shoes, winced her way into the bathroom to use the gunk Trina had left her to take off the gunk Trina put on her. She stripped off the jewelry, remembered the hair thing, fought it out, dragged and raked her fingers through her hair until it felt normal. She stripped off the dress, the thong, grabbed a long baggy t-shirt, and fell into bed. What time is it? No, don't tell me. Yes, tell me. It's about 3:30. God! The cat walked up the bed, jingling, sniffed at her, climbed over her, and made himself a nest in the small of her back. Rourke slid in, kissed her between the eyebrows. Did my part, she said, words slurring. Not so bad. And dropped away to sleep like the dead. She woke alone, which was no surprise, and even less of one when she checked the time. After 10? 10? She sat up, rubbed her hands over her face. Needed coffee, needed to move. After crawling out of bed, she hit the auto chef, primed herself with caffeine. She'd take a swim, she decided. A few hard laps would clear her head, shake out the post-party dregs. Then she could order Peabody out of bed. Her own fault, she drank too much to get out of range the night before. And they could work on the case for a couple hours. She turned toward the elevator, then considered it was the middle of the damn morning. Somebody could just walk in on her down in the pool. She dug out a black tank-style suit, pulled it on, pulled the sleep shirt over it. She debated tagging Rourke, telling him to come join her, but he'd very likely get ideas once they were both wet, and there were people in the house, probably lots of people, clearing out the party debris in the ballroom. Best to keep the swim solo. She stepped out of the elevator into the lushness of tropical plants. She heard the music, a low, quiet hum, and thought Rourke had beaten her to it. So maybe she wouldn't mind if he got ideas, as long as... God! She slapped her hands over her face, but the image of Peabody and McNabb groping each other in the pool remained burned on her retinas. Why? Why aren't I blind? Why is there no mercy? Sorry! Peabody sang it out. We're not naked or anything. Rourke said we could use the pool, and there were suits in the dressing room. We're both wearing suits. Promise!
Eve spread her fingers, wrist peeking through them. They were half-naked, McNabb standing in waist-high water, bony chest bare and gleaming wet, but standard black trunks below the waterline. Peabody wore bright blue that showed off plenty of cleavage. Hardly a wonder McNabb's hands had been full of Peabody's girls. She wasn't going to deny herself a swim, refused to give in to the cowardly urge to turn around and go back upstairs. "This half is mine." She cut a hand through the air. "That half's yours. Stay on your side."
"Thanks for letting us stay," McNabb said when she yanked off the shirt.
"Nothing like a good night's sleep after an aces party and the bonus round of a swim."
"Right. Your side, my side," she repeated, and dived in. She put them out of her mind, concentrated on the movement, on cutting through the water, pushing off, cutting through again. Her body loosened, her brain cleared. 25 laps later, she felt human, wanted more coffee. She let herself sink down, rise up, and saw Peabody and McNabb still there, floating side by side. To her surprise, she saw Rourke sitting at one of the little tables, drinking coffee. She sank again, pushed off again, swam underwater to the far end. She got out, dripping, reached for his coffee first, then a towel.
"Good morning," Rourke said. "It's a better one now.
I guess you've been dealing with the after-party breakdown."
"Actually, I had some other business. Somerset's on that.
How about some breakfast? I could do with some. I waited for you."
"Sure, yeah."
When he merely arched his eyebrows at her, she turned around.
"Breakfast, 15 minutes, my office."
Peabody flopped over, treading water.
"That'd be sweet. It's okay?
I just said so." 15, she repeated, and headed into the lush plants. "I used up my limited supply of gracious last night."
"I don't think Peabody or McNabb require it. You'll want some time to work with her. There's no point in anyone going hungry while you do, is there?"
"I guess not.
They were, you know, starting in on it when I came down. Her tits were half out of the suit."
"Sorry I missed it."
"You would be, pervert."
He grabbed her as they stepped out of the elevator, scrambled her brains with the kiss.
"If only you'd said 30 rather than 15 minutes, I'd show you a bit of perversion."
She laughed, but wiggled free. "I didn't figure they'd be out of bed. I only bothered with a suit because I remembered there'd be people here doing stuff, and better to be cautious. If I'd gotten up 10 minutes later, they'd have been naked and humping like whales."
"Do whales hump?"
"It sounds right."
"Oddly enough. I'll see about breakfast while you get dressed."
"I'll be quick."
"Be that. And later, after whatever work both of us have to deal with today, I'd like a date."
"A date for what?"
"A date for lounging with you. A vid, some popcorn, a fire crackling, and absolutely nothing to do but lie there."
The image made her smile. "That sounds like a perfect date."
"Absolutely perfect," she decided, as she dressed in black jeans, a dove gray sweater, soft flat boots.
She dug out the teardrop diamond pendant, slipped it on under her sweater. She started to reach for her weapon in harness, habit, remembered she'd secured it in her desk drawer. She shoved her badge, her link, other daily paraphernalia in her pockets.
What else did people need to carry, she wondered, as she headed out toward her office.
Work stuff, maybe, so a file bag or a briefcase, But nobody could ever convince her one of those planet-sized purses was necessary for survival. She caught the scent of food, of coffee, and followed her nose to her office, where the table she and Rourke often shared had been extended to hold settings and chairs for four. She watched Rourke come out of the little kitchen carrying a large covered tray. "You have droids to do that. I know you do." "Indeed we do. But it's fun to fuss a bit yourself for friends and family here and there. I went with full Irish all around, as a Scot would recognize the similar tradition." "They eat enough for five people at breakfast, too?" Eve asked as she went to her desk, got her weapon. "It's a fine meal that hits all the notes." He walked to her, slung an arm around her shoulders, studied the board as she did. "Have you a plan of action, then?"
"Sort of. Working on it."
"I'm thinking, poke at the wife. Get her to give away a little more on the husband. Copley's hands are dirty, and I think they're bloody. She's not stupid. I didn't get stupid from her.
If I play it right, she'll wonder, and she may tell me something I can hook on to."
"Or the sister. Not stupid either, but soft. I can probably find a spot or two on her to push. If she worries about the sister, I might get something out of her." "I have a feeling that family won't be having a happy Christmas. Not if things go right on my end." Peabody and McNab came in, both wearing lounging pants, loose tops.
"Where'd you get those clothes?" Eve asked.
"Somerset had them for us."
"Soft." Peabody rubbed her own sleeve. "It'd be weird to eat breakfast in party clothes. Weirder to talk about the case wearing them."
"Then we'll eat and we'll talk." Eve stepped back to the table, lifted the cover from the big platter.
"Wow! Look at all that! Smell all that!"
Peabody sniffed the air, sighed.
"It's tatty scones."
McNab's face lit like a child's.
"You have tatty scones. Remember, Peabody? We had some when we went to Scotland to spend the holidays with my family there. My granny made them." "Potato scones? Oh, yeah. Deadly and delicious. Good thing I danced like a maniac for hours."
Rourke gestured them to sit. "Somerset made them up, thinking you might enjoy a bit of home."
"Fuel up," Eve advised. "After this, the party's over."
"Tatty scones," McNab said again, and dived in.
Chapter 17. Tatty scones weren't half bad, Eve discovered, nor was eating them the morning after a big party with Peabody and McNab. She let the post-game analysis, as she thought of it, run its course with discussion, comments, opinions on who or what, who did what, and with whom, who said what. It was an oddity, really, just how much gossip could be distilled over a full Irish.
"I'm still trying to process my reaction to seeing Dickhead doing the sexy dance," Peabody commented.
"I never want to hear the words dickhead and sexy dance in any sort of conjunction again."
"Seriously," Eve added. "That's an order. Moving forward." She gestured to the board. "Copley remains top of the list. He fits the profile. His financial records demonstrate greed and deception and indicate potential payoffs. His initials are listed on the VIX spreadsheet with amounts that correlate to said payoffs."
"Giving him motive," Peabody agreed. "But then, since Ziegler was the man a whole lot of people loved to hate, a whole lot of people had motive."
"Accurate. Now look at the method. Two hard, and we believe enraged, impulsive shots with a handy blunt instrument. That's where I bumped down several of the whole lot of people. Rock could have pummeled him into paste.
And if the Vic showed any injuries from a fight, a beating, we'd be looking hard at him.
Lance Schubert doesn't show up on the spreadsheet, but he might have learned about the Vic having sex with his wife, confronted him.
But my personal probability index says Schubert would have gotten in a punch or two, and straight off.
Have it out straight off, rather than heading back to the bedroom while the Vic packed. She pushed away from the table before she ate more bacon just because it was there. McNabb, what did you do when you thought, mistakenly, Charles had bounced on Peabody?
I punched him.
McNabb danced his fingers up Peabody's arm.
That's all 5x5 now.
Because he hadn't bounced on her, and because Charles is a reasonable sort of guy. But my point is, your first impulse was fist in the face. Schubert strikes me as the same, and I don't see him letting it rest with his wife, who just doesn't have the guile to lie to me about him knowing. Still, he's not off the hook. Vic asks him to come by, Peabody speculated. Tells him to try to extort money for keeping it quiet.
Exactly. Instant rage. Grab the handy blunt object and end it with the flourish.
The flourish fits him, and it fits Copley. What Copley doesn't have is Schubert's sense of self-worth. Schubert doesn't have Copley's greed, or his pattern of going after wealthy women, cheating on them, cashing in on them. Copley's reaction, to my mind, would run like, Jesus, he took Ziegler to his club, treated him to golf and drinks and all that. Even though Ziegler's so obviously socially and financially inferior. He did him favors, and what does he get? Blackmailed. It's gone on long enough. Time to take charge. Time to show this asshole who's top dog. He loses his temper, which is also pattern, grabs the weapon, because he's not the type